97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the upcoming Winter Olympics. Our guest, Linda Robertson, sports writer for the Miami Herald and a UNC alum, who has covered 13 Olympic Games. Linda, as a result of what happened in Sochi, widespread doping by the Russian team, Russia is banned as a federation from the South Korea Games, specific athletes banned, others allowed to compete, but under a neutral flag. Russia is not on the uniform, all that stuff. But Thursday morning, the board that hears appeals and what have you has now thrown things into mayhem. Bring us up to speed.
Yes, after the decision to ban all but 169 Russian athletes from the Korean Games, the Court of Arbitration from Sports decided today that they're going to overturn lifetime bans for 28 Russian athletes. So this is a real sad turn of events for everyone in the anti-doping movement, because it looks like Russia is getting another pass to send cheaters to the games. They have already managed to get 169 athletes in after the IOC made a lot of news about how they were banning Russia from the Winter Olympics. Well, that's not much of a ban. So now you've got 28 more, and a lot of people are crying that this is another sign of how Russia's systematic doping system is just going to continue thriving, and that clean sport is dead again.
So if all 28 of these get in, that puts the Russian team, although they can't be called the Russian team, up to 200 athletes. So the moves that the IOC made, are they just gone?
It hurts the image of the IOC, which was already hurting in the wake of the Rio Games, when a lot of Russians were allowed to compete in the Summer Olympics after this devastating report from the World Anti-Doping Agency established that there was widespread, elaborate doping going on with the Russian track and field team and also in their other summer sports, and of course proving that hundreds of tests were tampered with at the Sochi Games when they had set up this system to hide positive results in the testing lab at Sochi. So, you know, you have a sports ministry in Russia that basically distributes drugs to its own athletes, teaches them how to cheat, manages ways to so that they can clear these drug tests. And clearly, President Putin is smiling now because this shows that really it's just a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, the IOC called it an unprecedented systematic manipulation of the anti-doping system. And what does that get you? You lose a few athletes from the upcoming Winter Games.
Right. I mean, they're going to lose a couple of their major medal contenders. It's going to hurt their medal count. You know, it's going to be somewhat embarrassing for them that they don't have the flag and the anthem. But we're going to have the same chaotic situation that we had before the Rio Games, where you've got athletes appealing and trying to get to the starting line at the last minute. And the clean athletes are going to be very angry that they're going to have these Russian cheaters in their events. And overall, it's a real crisis for the Olympics, which has been suffering from this tainted image. The Olympics is all about these beautiful human interest stories and these stirring competitions. And then, you know, weeks later, people find out that this wonderful story is just all a fake. You know, it brings you back to the whole Lance Armstrong saga, and people become very disillusioned by the Olympics.
Linda, you wrote an article just prior to the Rio Olympics in which you said the Lords of the Rings must ban Russia from the Rio Olympics. What were you feeling then, and what do you feel now?
I felt then that it was really time for the IOC to act decisively to save whatever integrity remains and to try to restore some of the romanticism of the games that it has lost. And Russia has just been thumbing its nose for so long. They've got a system there very similar to what East Germany was running. And, yes, some innocent, clean Russian athletes are going to be swept up and probably treated unfairly. But I just don't see what else they can do at this point, because these bans turn out to be, they're not bans at all. Now you've got almost 200 athletes who are going to be representing Russia and Korea.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the upcoming Winter Olympics with Linda Robertson of the Miami Herald, a proud UNC alum. Linda, one more quick question about the Russia thing, and then I want to move on to North Korea. Imagining myself as an Olympic athlete from, not from Russia, I'd like to know that if I win the gold, I won it against the very best the world had to offer, but not people who are doped up. So you can sort of look at this as two ways. You know, I'm disappointed that my gold wasn't against the Russians, but I might not have a gold if I was going against somebody who had an unfair advantage.
Right. I mean, it's just when you talk to the athletes who were denied their moment on the podium and their chance at Olympic medal, I mean, you know, this only comes around for them once every 4 years. And there's just so many sad stories of the clean athletes who never got their chance to shine. And when they reverse the results and hand out the medals 4 or 8 years later, obviously that's not the same. They're trying to right a wrong, but that moment when you had a chance to stand on the podium in front of the world in primetime TV is gone. So you have to think about the clean athletes and what's being denied them.
Yeah. So let's move on then to North Korea. So you have a situation that the ice hockey team, women's ice hockey team, is going to be joint North and South Korea. You have 10 other North Korean athletes who will be participating. The two countries will march under the same flag. Who would have imagined this even a month ago?
Yeah, this is a big breakthrough for the peninsula, for these two nations who really had been in a long period of stalemate. And so here you have an example of the Olympics actually living up to its ideals and creating, at least temporarily, a moment of peace in the history between these two nations. I mean, they had their first high-level talks in 2 years, and that was really, the Olympics was the impetus for that. So and the North Korean athletes are already there. North Korean flags are flying in South Korea, which is unheard of. South Koreans are talking about how they've been able to actually see North Korean people as if they're some sort of alien. and they're going to have a team, a joint team, marching together in the opening ceremonies, and that's going to be quite a moving and historic moment.
You know, what an odd juxtaposition this is. You know, our conversation about Russia versus our conversation about the two Koreas, it's odd, these games that are coming up.
Yeah, on the one hand, you have this, especially now with the news today, this horrible public relations development for the Olympics. And on the other hand, this gesture of unity is going to be very significant for the two Koreas. I'm not sure how happy the South Korean women's hockey team is about sharing their bench, and probably a couple of South Korean players will lose their spots on the roster, at least at game time. It's a small token team from North Korea. These are not necessarily medal contenders, but it's a significant breakthrough, and it's going to really lower the geopolitical tensions between these countries. Who knows? It might lead to further talks and warming of relations.
Yeah, over the past several months, we've heard a lot of talk about, concerns about safety of the Olympic athletes. But a report on at the end of this week indicated that South Korean people feel safer with the North Koreans in the games than they would with them out of the games. So I suppose that in and of itself is a positive development.
Exactly. People who might have been paranoid about what Kim Jong-un would do when the spotlight was on South Korea, now I think, can calm down and realize that, he's not going to jeopardize his own athletes and also further, damage his image by doing something crazy during the Olympics.
So to jump back again to this juxtaposition, those of us who have been fans, avid supporters, if you will, of the Olympics for many, many years, we see it, or at least I'll go out on a limb. I see it, have seen it, as a way for governments to come together, athletes from different cultures to come together. Are we losing that as a result of, this is a positive development with the two Koreas, but with the doping and all of this other stuff, have we lost or are we losing the Olympic ideal?
I do think it's suffering right now, and I think doping is the main reason. People just feel that the IOC is a corrupt organization. They feel that the anti-doping, the World Anti-Doping Agency hasn't done enough. They question the testing system that's in place. Why doesn't that ever work? And I think that what makes the Olympics work is a certain level of romanticism that, doping just tears that all down, because doping is all about cheating. And the Olympics is supposed to be all about, brotherhood and peace and fair play.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the Winter Olympics with Linda Robertson of the Miami Herald. Linda, I wanted to jump into, you made a comment earlier about how even with some 200 Russian athletes being able, it looks like, to now compete in the Olympics or close to that, that there will be some repercussions for the Russians. One of them is that it's likely to hurt their medal count. And you know that medal count is something that's very interesting to me. I've studied it and looked at it for a long time. The Sochi medal table has already changed a couple of times. It's probably going to change again, based on the Court of Arbitration's ruling on Thursday. is the medal table, do you think it makes sense? The medal tables that we have, we actually have two, sort of the U.S. system and the European/world system. And as you know, I've argued that both of them are flawed. What are your thoughts about the medal table and how we measure success at the Olympics?
Well, I like your system because it tallies, it reflects the gradations of what's going on in the field of play. Some countries and some fans measure Olympic success purely by the number of gold medals that a country wins. And then others, including the United States, they like to emphasize the total number of gold, silver, and bronze that countries win. So you sort of have this difference of opinion of how success should be measured. And I think your system sort of takes into account, because of the point values that you assign, it's like a more of a total picture of how a country performs.
After the Beijing Olympics, I think it was The Guardian out of London, I don't remember for sure, which wrote that accused the U.S. of spinning the medal table, right? Because the U.S. had more total medals, but China had way more gold medals than the U.S. did. Therefore, the values, if you will, of that medal count was greater than the value of the U.S. medal count. So what I'm interested in is fairly recognizing the accomplishments of all the athletes. If you don't even count silver and bronze, why award them? And if you count them all the same, we don't count them the same. We don't look at them the same. So I think there has to be some kind of system that assigns value points, if you will.
I agree with you, because I think now you've got these two different schools of thought, and I think it's confusing also for the fan. And of course, we know that the Olympics is a big political competition between these countries, you know, who has the bragging rights, who's the best. So it needs to be measured accurately.
Yeah, and when you have two systems, well, you know, I'll go back to when I was in Beijing for the Olympic Games. You know, I would be in my hotel room. I'd be looking at USA Today, or I didn't get the Miami Herald over there, or NBC Olympics page. And it's like, oh, the U.S. is on top. Great. That was the way I was accustomed to seeing it all my life, total medal count. And then you go out on the street in Beijing to all the little kiosks, and guess who's on top? China is. And so my initial thought was, well, that's goofy, you know. And then you go, well, wait a minute. The system I'm accustomed to is kind of goofy, too.
Right. I think, and we're in this country, in the United States, we're all about handing out awards. You know, people get awards from graduating from kindergarten. And so, you know, to say that a bronze medal is equivalent to gold without any sort of gradation, it doesn't really make sense. And then these other countries, you know, the winner is the only person who counts. So if you came in third by 0.2 seconds, you know, you might as well have been last. So I think somewhere in there, there's got to be a way to measure the medal count more accurately. And also, I think it would be a cool way to sort of, you know, have that scoreboard that we look at, that everyone's looking at every day, to make that more meaningful.
30 seconds left. Who are the top three U.S. athletes we ought to be looking at?
Well, I would say number one, you've got Michaela Schifrin. She is an incredible slalom skier, but this year she had 10 World Cup wins, so she's expanding her repertoire. Lindsey Vonn will be back, but I think Schifrin is going to be our skiing star. I think it's going to be interesting to see. We've got two African American athletes on the speed skating, short track, and long track teams, selecting really an incredibly diverse U.S. team. That's going to be interesting to see, and whether the long track team can recover from their failure in Sochi. Keep an eye on our snowboarders, of course, including Chloe Kim, who's only 17 years old. She could be a big winner. And Shaun White, of course, is back for his fourth Olympics. And then you may see some interesting breakthroughs in such sports as cross-country skiing and biathlon for the United States, where we never win medals, but we've got a chance with people like Lowell Bailey and Jesse Diggins to win some medals. Figure skating, we've had a long drought with our women, but Nathan Chen, the first male to land five quads in a long program, has got a shot on the men's side for a medal.
It will be interesting, to say the least. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Linda Robertson. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk, and as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.